Okay, well, I want to welcome everybody, and for those who weren't here Saturday, we had a really good seminar in town, but we had a really good meeting on entering the kingdom, the world of the spirit, up on the site, experiencethebigbook.org, probably Saturday or Sunday. For those who don't know, we have a website where we have all the podcasts, and we have thoughts on all the steps and other issues of recovery. This Saturday, we're going to read probably the most important paragraph that's changed my life and how I live. On page 84, we're in step 10. So if you can join us Saturday morning, it's great stuff. WADIT, that's the acronym for how we live. And if you come Saturday, you'll hear what that means. Sunday night, we are approaching Bill's story where he's admitted complete defeat. And God's going to make a move now so that we're here today. And we're going to read about Ebbie Thatcher and Bill W. in his kitchen and what happened to Bill W. and then how he went out and he found Dr. Bob and we're here today. So if you can join us, it's good stuff. We're at three different parts of the book. Tonight, we're now in step four. I didn't realize, but it's taken us quite a while to get to page 64, probably over a year. I talk too much, but we use a lot of other information. We've been doing carrying the message and steps we took, and we also have been doing the history. And we finished up last week. I did step zero. For those who don't know what step zero is, I put the podcast out this morning. And we talked about the idea that we're going to read tonight on how long do you have from your last drink before you drink again. And step zero is Joe Hawk. I got that from him. He's passed away, but he was a great AA speaker. And he said that it's the time for when you've had the grace of God to admit complete defeat and you haven't worked the steps. And how long do you have before that grace period of seeing the truth runs out and you drink again? How many steps do you need before you're going to take another drink? And so that's a good question. Because remember, we drink because of our emotions. Anybody do that in this room? Mm-hmm. And we have this, each one of us has an individual emotional thermometer in our head. Did you know that? And it's got your name on it. And when your emotions get to a certain level, it tells your mind you have to have a drink. Anybody in this room have one of those? Mm-hmm. Now, how many steps do you need to keep that emotions from hitting that level? And so that was because we're on page 63, and we've read the third step prayer. I'm not going to read it again. But I did notice something. I wrote some notes in the book that when we say the third step prayer, we ask him to take away my difficulties. Anybody see that? That victory over them may bear witness, I may be a testimony to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. And I wrote difficulties, not circumstances. Because I've had a few people lately tell me that they gave everything to God and nothing changed in 6 weeks, so that they don't believe in God. Difficulties are the way I see the circumstances, the way I react to things. Change the way I see things, change the way I react, and then I'll bear witness of God's power to do that, and his love for me, and the way of life that allows me to do that. And that's really what the whole program is about. I'm relieved of the bondage of self if I see things as situations and not difficulties. And the difficulties I have are related to my blockage from God. Anybody ever hear that we're blocked from God? And there are three things that block me from God: fear, anger, and shame, and guilt, and harmful actions. And so if I take away my fear, my anger, and I change the way I act, then things are going to get better. So I've always wondered what he means by difficulties, and I don't think it's, circumstances don't change, but we change. Now, there's a great promise on page 100. You don't have to turn your book there. But it says, if we follow the dictates of a higher power, I will presently, notice the word presently, live in a new and wonderful world, no matter the circumstances. Now, to me, that's the greatest promise in the big book, that if I follow these steps and I follow God's will for me, the world will always be wonderful. No matter what's going on out there, I'll be okay inside. Anybody think that's good? And that's what we get in AA. We don't get the world changed, we change. We change the way we see things. And then there's the warning after you say the third step prayer. It says, be sure you're ready before taking the third step, that you're at last abandoning yourselves utterly to Him. Surrender all of yourself to Him. Are you willing to do that? Now, there's a hint they don't say this because they're on page 63, but you need to do that the rest of your life all the time. Now, how do you know when you're not abandoning yourself utterly to God? You don't feel good. You have fear, you're angry, and you don't like the way things are going. And so it's a process that you're going to do the rest of your life. But the third step to really be meaningful has to be a total commitment to let go and have God direct your life. It's like it's the beginning of the rest of your life doing that. Then they talk about desirable to take the spiritual step with an understanding person. But they say it's better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. And you're talking about meeting God with this prayer. You're going to God. You're asking Him to do whatever He wants with you. And so this is the beginning of a relationship with God, which should continue for the rest of your life. And it says, this is only a beginning. You see where that is at the bottom of the page? Though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. I think the great effect is that you feel like you're not carrying the world anymore. You feel hope. You feel like you've got someone you're starting to go to direct your life. You don't have to bear the burden of running the world anymore. And to me, that was a great relief when I finally gave up. Now, there's a hint. You can give up, and then you can give up a little less the next day. And then you can give up a little less. And we have less give up till we haven't given up at all. And so it's a thing where you want to try honestly and humbly to ask God for help every day, the rest of your life, all the time. So here's where we come to step zero. It says next. So you do the third step and then next. How long is next after the third step? Anybody know? Next, it says, we thought about doing the steps. No, it doesn't say that, does it? It says we launched. Now, alcoholics think launches. It's like when the water's cold and you're getting in the pool and like you put a little foot in and you'll do a little bit and then you get out and then you go in a little bit more. That's, you see, alcoholics read this differently than normal people. But launched on a course of vigorous action. I mean, why? You're dying. You're new. You're on page 63. You haven't worked any of the steps. You have untreated alcoholism. You need to get a power in your life to live. So I suggest that you get working with somebody right away and get in the book and try to get to the third and fourth steps quickly, making sure you've done one and two. I think the mistakes I've made working with people is I assume they've lived one or two and they haven't been convinced of their first steps, so they balk at four. You can tell who isn't completely defeated. They don't want to do what you ask them to do. And they have excuses. Now, if you're dying and you're drowning, and somebody offers you an oar and you're drowning in the ocean, are you going to take it? Now, alcoholics are going to look at the oar and say, "Well, am I drowning real fast or not? Do I need the oar yet?" And you see, that's what they're talking about. That's why the program was very successful in 1937. because the people they worked with were down and out. They were done. They were completely without hope. And so launched on a course of vigorous action, not thinking. Now notice, they don't ask you if you think you need to do it. They don't ask that, do they? They don't say, what do you think of this? They say, just next, launch on this course of vigorous action. And the action steps start with step 4 and go through to 12, and they're continuous. I think 1, 2, and 3 are action steps too, but they need to be followed by the other steps to be effective all day long. And when we're reading on Saturday is how we do steps 4 through 9 all day, every day in step 10. But you can't do that every day if you haven't done it once. And we're going to find out why we do the 4-step in a few sentences. And it says, the first step of the vigorous action is a personal house cleaning. And so I like to think of it as, if you're going to park your car in the garage, you have to have room for the car, right? And so what you're making room for God to run your life by cleaning your mind of all the crap that's blocking him. Now, if I wake up and if I live in fear and anger today, God can't run that show. Get it? And so the 4-step is the beginning to take an honest look at your life and your thinking so you can see the truth about it. So when it comes up now during the day, you know what to do to face and be rid of that thinking that's killing you. Anybody have a problem with their thinking? I was in a meeting and the guy said something very profound. He's a nice young man. He's just out, he's in reintegration. And he said that he was told in treatment that he should never listen to his first thought. That's good. You know, I yelled at him, none of them. None of them. All of our thinking. Remember, S-H-I-T, simply how I think, is my problem. And it's true. And no matter how long you're sober, it's still S-H-I-T. Because you could have I don't want to cuss on the site, but you could have shitty thinking anytime, any day, no matter how long you're sober. And we have to learn to face and be rid of it. So you're going to clean your house, clean your mind. You're looking at your thinking in step 4, and the actions as a result of your thinking. Now, a lot of people are worried about that this is confession, and they're going to have to tell everybody all the terrible things they did. Well, it doesn't say that in here, in the big book. The big book wants to know why you took the actions. What in your character made you do the things you did? Joe and Charlie said, if you commit adultery 100 times, you're probably tired, but we don't care. Why did you do it? Not that you did it. What made you do that? What made you rob the bank 100 times? What made you do the things you did inside of your character, your personality, your thinking? And it says many of us had never attempted. Now, I don't think that's true. I think that the big book needs to be rewritten, because we did personal house cleaning of them. We wanted to clean their houses, right? We had a whole list of people that we were going to fix, right? Anybody else have that? I was the only one. And so we don't want to take anybody's inventory anymore. It's our inventory. And we have to stop taking other people's inventory to justify ourselves. It says, though my decision in step 3 is vital. Now, vital is necessary for life. You get the meaning? And crucial. And here's a line that's not read at many meetings. It could have little permanent effect unless at once. So any time between next and at once is when you're supposed to do your 4-step. And that's all the book says. Do it right away. Get into this step. Followed by a strenuous effort to be faced and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. So step 4 is going to be a strenuous effort. Doesn't mean that it's hard. It means you're going to give it your best shot. This is not a difficult step. I don't know anybody who can't do this. I know some people are too smart to do it. They think about it, and they never do it. They're analyzing it. You want to face and be rid of things in me which have been blocking me. So I'm going to face the things in my mind and be rid of the things in my mind that are blocking me from God's power. Anybody think that's a good idea? Now, that's very important because this applies if you're sober 25 years and you could have memorized the big book, but all day long you have to face and be rid of the things that are blocking you from God. We're all going to have to do it the rest of our life all the time. Because all of us are born with self-centered glasses. And we have to learn that when we're seeing things through our self-centered glasses, we have to take them off and put on the God-centered glasses. And then we see things differently. So this is a process that I'm going to use all the time. Anybody ever judge anymore? Am I the only one? Anybody judging me right now? If you are, don't tell me. I have a complex. We have to face and be rid of this all the rest of our lives. Now, we don't know how to do it, and we have to do step four. That's why I'm emphasizing you need to do this. It's not complicated. You need to recognize what's blocking you from God's power. Now, liquor was but a symptom. Liquor is a symptom of somebody who's blocked. Broken. We call it broken. Blocked. Blocked from God through what? Their self-centeredness. And the things that block them are their resentment, fear, and their actions that cause shame and guilt. So liquor is not a problem, it's a solution to being blocked. So AA suggests don't drink anymore. Anybody think that's a good idea? Mm-hmm. Don't drink anymore, it doesn't work. Try this and see if this will unblock you. Because alcohol doesn't work after a while, right? And so if you're unblocked from God, God will tell you how to react differently so you don't need to drink. God will direct your reactions and change your emotions. So we had to get down to the causes and conditions, and I wrote of what? Of an unmanageable life. Of a life of self-centeredness so that we can see the truth. Now, people come in here, let's say you're a patient, and you come in and your symptom is that you can't eat, you've lost 100 pounds, and you can't breathe. Well, you might want to know what the cause is, right? Right? And they have a big mass in their pancreas. And if you don't treat the mass in the pancreas, nothing's going to change. You see? So we have to get down to the causes and condition of our illness. We can see it on the outside. We're here, right? Our life's unmanageable. Things are terrible. We can't stop drinking and using. We've made a mess of our lives. We're full of fear and anger and shame and guilt. Anybody have that when you come in here? In fact, we should give everybody a checklist when they come in and check it off. And then you're done with your first step. All right. That was funny. I thought that was funny. All right. Nobody laughed. All right. We'll move on. I'm in a good mood. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. We're going to inventory my personality. Remember, Roland Hazard went to Dr. Young, and Dr. Young said, you're doomed. You have a mind of a chronic alcoholic. Well, that doesn't sound very good, right? But he says, there are these phenomena where people will have a total change in their whole personality. Now, on Saturday, we're going to read about Bill W., who at the point we left him with last Saturday was drunk in his kitchen in November 1934, and he'd lost everything, and he was dying. But yet, he was able to live 37 more years. Something happened to him. His personality changed. In fact, we're going to read that in the hospital, after working the steps, he's already thinking about all the alcoholics he could help. Now that's a change in his personality. And we go from self-centered to God-centered. But we can't do that till we take an honest evaluation of my personality. I was going to make a joke. I said, I still get an evaluation. I am married. And I do get an evaluation regularly of my personality. And I do appreciate it. This was step four. A business which takes no regular she never listens, so I don't worry. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Now, the analogy he's going to use, because he's a brilliant man, is a business inventory versus your personal inventory. So a business, let's say Target. Anybody like Target?
Yep.
It's a good store. They have a lot of people go in there. You know why? They have good inventory. They're selling stuff that people want. So they have to take an inventory to see what people are buying. Now, if they kept all the things on the shelves that nobody wanted, you think they'd be making any money? See, alcoholics, what we do is we decide everything that's killing us, and we want more of it. We want to hold on to it. We don't see it as bad. We don't see our self-centeredness and our fear and our judgment, our impatient intolerance, our self-pity, because we've never looked at it and seen how that's harmed my life. And so taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. So it's June, 19th? They're already planning Christmas, Target. And you know, Mark knows, he used to help deliver their stuff. They're already figuring out how to get the stuff on the shelves December 1st, right, so people will buy it. Now, how do they know what they want? They took an inventory of what they sold last year, and they're ordering more of that. So they face the facts and find the facts about their inventory to discover the truth about the stock in trade. What's that? I don't know. All right. They want to know the truth about the stuff on the shelves. Now, the problem with me when I came in here, I thought I knew the truth about my personality, but it was very distorted. It was wrong. And my thinking was wrong, and I didn't realize that. I had wrong judgment, which is resentment. I had wrong judgment, which was resentment. I had wrong belief, which was fear. And I took wrong actions, which harm people. And I didn't see that. So one object is to disclose damaged or unsellable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. So the things we want to learn in step 4 is when we have the damaged goods come up, we want to be able to promptly and without regret get rid of them. Now, what that means in English is that when I get angry today, I'm going to learn in the resentment inventory that we're going to study how to do that, how to say a prayer, how to look at my anger differently and be rid of it. Wouldn't that be great?
Yep.
Then we're going to learn when we do our fear inventory, how when we get afraid, why we're afraid, what we need to do, how we say the prayers so we get rid of fear right away. And so there are people I know that don't work the steps, they don't like the steps or whatever, I don't know. They're alcoholics, they say they come here, that's fine. I don't judge them, but I know I need this because I do get angry and fearful, and I know how to face and be rid of it right away. And so for me, this is why I need the steps, and I need to do them all the time. And we want to get rid of them promptly and without regret. We don't want to hold on to damaged goods. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. That's why you can't do it alone. You can't do your 4-step in your mind. Some people like to do that, but it's the same mind that's damaged. And so you have to put it on paper and get it out of your mind and show it to somebody else. I said if you continue to hold on to the stuff that won't sell, then you're not going to put anything in there that's good. So we have our columns, the right and left-hand column on our spiritual checklist. Everybody's seen that? I don't have any for the new people. But whenever I'm disturbed, I'm on the left-hand side, my characteristics and my self-centeredness is coming out, and I want to practice the right-hand side, the characteristics of God. I don't want to hold on to my self-centered characteristics anymore, because if I do, then nothing's going to change. Ed'll be back, and as he says, if nothing changes, nothing changes, right? And if I don't change, my sobriety date will. So it says we did exactly the same thing with our life. We took stock honestly. Now, you're not writing your life story. We don't care where you went to high school or if you played baseball, what your batting average was. We want to know honest, a look at your life of your self-centered thinking. and your actions as a result. And we want to take stock honestly. And it says the first thing we're going to do is we're going to search out the flaws in me which caused my failure. Now, does everybody agree that our troubles are of our own making?
Yes.
And they arise out of ourselves, right? And we're examples of self-will run riot. Anybody like that here? Extreme example. Thank you. I was an extreme example. So we're going to search out the flaws in my makeup that made up my extreme self-will and how that was manifested in my life. Anybody think that's a good idea? Because if we don't do that, we don't know how to change the way we live. It says, being convinced that self manifests in various ways with which has defeated us. Anybody believe that? We consider its common manifestations. Now, here's where people get confused. And I've given out that handout 18 trillion times. What makes up self-will? And I have some more of these. I should have handed them out if I was thinking. We have three instincts of life, social, sexual, and material, that dominate us so we survive, right? And they're normal and they're God-given. But we're self-will-run riot. So I decide what I need in my sex instinct to be happy. I decide what my security instinct I need to be happy and my social instinct. And when I do that, I'm running the world. And as a result of being self-centered, I have wrong thinking, which is resentment, fear, and the harmful actions. You see that? And the fourth step is where we're going to look at the manifestations of self. And the manifestations of my self-centeredness are my anger, fear, and my harms to others. That's all we're inventorying. And we're going to look at our resentments, our fears, and our harms to others, and we're going to see what in our personality caused us to have them. Then we're also going to learn how to be rid of anger. Anybody think that's a good idea? Because we do. We're going to go through how we immediately can change the way we see things and not get angry, and the same thing with fear. And then we're going to look at our sex relationships and our sane sex ideals so we're not hurting people there anymore, and our other relationships. So the manifestations of self are the wrong thinking as a result of being self-centered. And then it says resentment is the number one offender. So I asked myself, what does it offend? It's committing a crime. What's the biggest crime that resentment does? It's blocking me from God. Remember, we're going to look at the things in myself which have been blocking me from God, and the number one thing is anger and resentment. Anybody agree with that? And we're also going to learn that all of our anger is caused by self-centered fear, and they're all intertwined. So resentment is the number one thing that blocks me from God. And it's a result of wrong thinking as the result of trying to satisfy my instincts of life. For instance, people may not know what I'm talking about. I decide what I need materially to be happy. If somebody threatens that in any way, I get angry. Or if I don't think I have enough of it, I get angry, right? The same way with our ambitions, our pride, our self-esteem. So it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Is that a true statement?
Yeah.
Yes. Because why? What is the relationship between resentment and alcohol? Alcohol is a liquid in a bottle, right? And yet it's sitting in that bottle and it has power over you. An inert substance. It's inert. It doesn't jump out of the bottle, does it? It never jump out of the bottle, right? So how does resentment relate to alcohol? When we're angry and we don't feel good, then our emotional barometer reaches a certain point where the alcohol has power over me in the bottle. And what does it do in the bottle? It fixes my anger in the way I feel. So I think we're going to stop right there tonight. I hope this was helpful. It's why we do the fourth step, and then we're going to do this the rest of our lives. So next week we're going to look at how we do the fourth step, the first three columns. Then we're going to look at how we get freedom from anger the next week. And then we're going to look at what was our mistakes and what we need to change in our personality. So, thank you.